Hello, and welcome to the Walt Weekly Podcast. My name is Walter Latham, Sr., and I'm here with Keena Parham and our team, the team of the Walt Weekly. Michelle will not be here tonight. She had a conflict, but, you know, we're thinking about her, and I know y'all guys are, too. And we have a very, very special guest for y'all guys in the house tonight, Miss Joanne McLeod Satterwhite. Thank you, Joanne, for coming in. We appreciate you.
My pleasure, Walt.
All right. I just want to tell our audience a little bit about you. And I'm not going to tell you when you were born because you're much younger than I am, so I don't even want to go there, right? But anyway, you were born in Perkay, Barina, North Carolina.
True.
And Joanne was fourth of six siblings, and she graduated from Fouquet. Did I pronounce that correctly? Fouquet?
Fouquet. Right? The Q. Fouquet.
Fouquet. Fouquet. It's French, I guess, right?
Fouquet. I guess.
Fouquet Consolidated High School in 1970. And after graduating from high school, she attended W.W. Holding Technical Institute for Secretarial Science. And Joanne was reared in the church, you know, and that's most people from the South, like me.
Yes.
I was raised in the church, and she sung in a choir. I was in the quartet. I had a four-piece band going. And she accepted the Lord Jesus at age 12. Her natural love for people grew out and learning to treat people the way you want to be treated, along with being optimistic. And Joanne grew up on a farm where she taught to endure. She was taught to endure and work hard. There she learned to drive tractors, a mill, a sled full of tobacco, and old farm trucks. In July 1977, she was chosen as Raleigh's first female transit bus operator for the city of Raleigh, North Carolina. And she, not just the first black female, she was the first female. And she was chosen from 110 applicants back in 1977. And she expressed, you know, it was God's favor on my life to work for the citizens of Raleigh. And this is what Joanne said, it's God's favor. And she worked for Capital Area Transit for 35 years. And starting as a bus driver and later becoming a supervisor with duties of a 8 a.m. dispatcher, payroll manager, assigned buses, ran routes to other bus operators, answer complaints, and answering phones as needed. Joanne was a tremendous asset to that bus company. All right? And I do want to turn it over to Joanne before I get too far ahead of her and let her tell us a little bit in more detail about what she's been doing and what she's done, because she's truly a hero. And we were very fortunate to have her during Women's History Month. Joanne, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you, Walt. I certainly appreciate you inviting me to be your guest. Getting back to when I first started driving the city bus in Raleigh, correctly, I was chosen out of 110 girls, and I was thinking, how in the world could that possibly happen? That's why I figured it had to be God's favor. I mean, there were applicants from New York, Virginia, Maryland, Greensboro, Asheville, Hollow Springs, Durham, Apex, all over. And for me to be chosen to be the first female operator, I felt really, really favored. I really did. And when I was hired, I mean, it was a man's world, but the old saying, it's a man's world, but you can't do nothing without a woman or girl in it. So when the city of Raleigh decided to hire a female, I think it was an opportunity, and I think it was time, because most of the men felt like women shouldn't be driving big vehicles like that. They didn't think that we were capable or able to do it. But me, an example, I had to prove them wrong, because some of the drivers said, "Well, she would last three months. I gave her 2 weeks. I gave her 6 months." So I had to prove them wrong. I just had to. My stamina enforced me to stick and stay with the job. It wasn't that easy starting out. You know, they didn't have any women bathroom. The buses were old, and we didn't have but two mirrors, so you couldn't see the right side of traffic. You either take a chance or your top mirror in the aisle of the bus, you had to kind of turn it to the side where you could see traffic. And I tell the ladies now, you are so fortunate. You got mirrors and cameras all over the bus. We didn't have cameras back then. We didn't have no phones to call the police. You had to handle everything on your own. And I've always been the type of person that I felt like I could always handle any situation. I don't think there's nothing too hard that me and Jesus can't handle anyway. So I really didn't have no problems with the public. When I started out on the street, the terminal was Fairfax Street Mall, and the terminal was First Citizen Bank. That's where we parked, loaded up the passengers. And there they got the big old North Square where the buses pulls in the aisles and whatever. But when I pulled out for my first trip, there was a man, and he said, "You driving this bus?" I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "Well, I'm not going to ride with no woman driving no bus." So the passenger says, "Well, make up your mind. We got to get to work." I was driving the Wake Medical route. "We got to get to work." And he says, "Well, I went on the next bus, and it better be a man." I said, "Yes, it will, because I'm the only one. It'll be a man." So as I finished loading my trip, we went down here, New Bern Avenue, to Wake Medical. And my passengers, they clapped. They said, "You really can drive this bus. You can handle this bus." That turn you made, you came to that entrance, it was so smooth. You know, so I learned a lot from my passengers, too, you know, to take care of them, you know, and they would take care of me.
And I was thinking when I, you know, thinking prior to our interview, you know, I think it was yesterday, a couple of days ago, anyway, I was just reviewing your bio and the questions that we have for you. And I was thinking, Rosa Parks, all right, that's way before your time. That was back in the late 50s.
Yeah.
When she was, she had to sit in the back of the bus, right?
That's right.
So now I look at you, Rosa Parks, because of her, you can sit in the middle, and then you went all the way to the front. You driving the bus. Ironic. How is that? That's advancement there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I often think of Rosa Parks. I always say she wouldn't give her seat so that I could take a seat behind the seat of the bus to drive it. Yeah. And I think Rosa Parks was an outstanding person to do that, because she opened up the doors for everybody, equality. You know, you sit on the bus, you can sit anywhere on the bus now. You know, however you want to sit.
Drive the bus.
And drive the bus. Yeah. And that was how Rosa Parks had the gumption to take that stand, not to give him her seat.
You mentioned some of the challenges that you experienced when some of the guys didn't want to get on the bus because they saw you were riding the bus. What were the demographics of your, your patrons at that time?
The route that I had was mostly predominantly black passengers. Very few whites rode the Wake Medical bus at the time, because that bus went straight to Wake Medical Center, the hospital.
Okay.
So most of the people that I was riding was going to the hospital or the clinic or to work, you know.
So the challenges were more so because you were a woman, not necessarily because you were a black woman. So it was a gender-based challenge.
It was a gender, because I was a female. Nobody ever thought, I just, or even dreamed, that a woman would one day sit behind a transit steering wheel or driving the bus. Nobody even fancied that. And I really don't know what prompted the city at that time. I'm the kind of person, I'm very confident. I think I can tackle anything, you know, so.
Okay, I hear you.
Yeah, I was happy to get the job.
All right, there's 110.
Yeah, when the city said they was going to hire a woman, they were only female applicants. I was chosen out of 110 applicants, yeah.
Okay,
All right. I was one of those 110 applicants.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I had a girlfriend that, she suggested, "Well, Joey, you know, you got good driving experience, raised on the farm and everything, and you behind the wheel of your brother's tractor and trailer. So let's go put the application in." I said, "Well," I consulted my husband. He said, "No, he didn't want me out of town. He didn't want me driving at night. It's dangerous out there." But me, I put the application in anyway. Had no idea I would get it. I mean, and when I told him I had the job, he looked at me like, "What?"
So you went behind your husband's back without him agreeing.
He was floored. He was floored. But he was quite proud, too. He was really proud, you know.
Absolutely.
And was I afraid? No. And I worked all shifts. I mean, the charters, we had to be there like 4 o'clock in the morning and take church groups to the beach and whatever. And it'd be late when I get back and regular routes now. Some of my family, they rode with me at night sometime. My sister and my son, they all rode with me every now and then. But it was an easy job for me and I loved it. I wasn't fearful because I love the drive. I love people. And to get something, to do something rather, that you really love, really don't mind doing it, and to get paid for it, let me tell you, that's a blessing.
Oh, you can't beat that. Ain't too many people
can say that. You know, a lot of people, even the men that was there, they wanted to get up, they come in there dragging, and, you know, but me, I get up and say my prayer, put that uniform on me, I was ready for the day.
What were some of the, I guess, the experiences that you had as you got used to being a bus driver, where I guess you felt very appreciative of choosing, of making that decision? Because I'm sure it was a little challenging in the beginning. May have been a little bit odd. You've kind of faced some issues with people. But at some point, I'm sure you felt like this is home.
Yes, I did. Listen, I spoke with my pastor concerning this job, and I had prayed that the Lord would bless me with a job where I can make better money, bigger money. At the time, I was working for child abuse and neglect in the Admiral building on Salisbury Street. Well, it was a nice job. You dressed nice and, you know, handled cases. You did the phone, but it wasn't any money in it. So I talked to my pastor. I told him, Pastor, I prayed for this job. I said, and I kind of want your opinion about it. So I told him, I said, I may have an opportunity to drive the city bus in Raleigh. He said, wow, now that's a big opportunity and a challenge. He said, I understand it's all men. I said, yes, sir, all men. He said, well, you're probably going to get some feedback about why you down there with all of them men. And I said, look, I ain't thinking about that. I'm thinking about this money that I'm going to get. So back then, they started you out for like $5.50 an hour. But hey, that was more than I was making at child abuse and neglect services. So when he told me, he said, well, you know, you've always been strong and persevering. And he said, I don't see no problem. I said, well, there ain't one problem. And he said, well, you know what? If you were in line with it, if CP&L was the top electrical company, if CP&L hired you to be a lineman, you wouldn't want to go on the pole with a skirt, would you? I said, no, sir. He said, well, some jobs require pants. He said, I don't feel like it's no problem. He said, I don't want you to feel condemned either. Oh, that was the key word for me. Didn't want me to feel condemned. That was it. And it really topped it off, you all. Let me tell you. I was driving that Wake Medical bus, and there was a little lady that sat right across on the right side. She watched me the whole trip. And she got ready to get off the bus, and she says, honey, I see Jesus through your pants. And I said, what? She said, yeah, you keep doing what you're doing. I said,
wait, you said, she said, what again? Because I feel like I heard you wrong.
She said she could see Jesus through my pants.
Okay, I did hear you right. Okay.
And that was a turning point for me. You know, anything my pastor said, you know, it's all right. Don't have confidence. I did have the confidence. But when she spoke that to me, I said, how did this woman hear my conversation about these pants with my pants? How did she know this? But now God places people right when you need them, when you need them, anytime you need them. And when she told me she saw Jesus through my pants, that was fun. That was the world to me. I said, yo, this is my job. This is my job. Keeping my job. And Mr. Deaton told me, as long as you want this job, it's yours. And you get in your bus, that's your bus. You take control. And however you see fit for that, to handle, work these out, that's you. I had, okay, and that's all I needed. I mean, I've had some remarkable things happen to me on the bus. I remember one morning I was driving the Rex Hospital bus. This is so so amazing to me. The bus, I emptied all my passengers, and I knew they were all empty. Okay. Well, somewhere where behind the stairwell, when I got to the end of the line, woman down the bus, I cut the lights out, and I decided to sing a little song, you know, and I started out, way. This black man jumps up. Oh, Lord, my mom used to sing that song with me. Can you sing it tonight? I said, son, you're not supposed to be on here. This is an elderly man. He said, I'm glad I stayed. You saw my mom sang that song to me. That song always means something to me. Well, I sound starved because I didn't know about it on the best for me. I was starting. And I told him, I said, well, wait, sir, where are you heading? He said, I was going to get off at Rex Hospital. I said, well, I almost doubled back to Rex and I let you out there. And when I went to Crabtree to pick up the passenger and headed back towards Rex, he got on and he came and he said, man, you really made my day. You really made my day. I said, well, I'm glad to help. I said, don't ever stay on the bus like that empty with the driver. I said, you frightened. You really frightened me. He said, I'm so sorry. I apologize. But I enjoyed that song. Thank you so much. And that really made me feel good. It really did.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because I'm here to help. I'm here to help. I'm here to serve. I'm a servant. So I love serving.
I heard someone say one day, what is life if you can't be what is the purpose or what is the meaning of life if you cannot be of service to others?
That's right. That's right.
And you never know what someone's going through, you know.
That's right.
Like, it's funny because some people, even like, let's just say you go through the drive-thru, right? And the way the person handles you.
Yes.
It may be a regular day and you didn't even know that you needed that kind of a response from someone.
That's right. That's right.
So I think when you're in service positions, like customer service, like driving the bus where you interact with a lot of different people, you never know how you can change their day.
That's right. I was a lawyer, a preacher, a teacher, a doctor. I was everything to my passengers. Because the regular routes, I knew my passengers, and they knew me. A lot of times they wouldn't even have to ask for a transfer because I knew they needed to get to another bus. I knew all their stops, and they thought, just you're not only thing you drive, but you're smart. If you can remember things, so you know, it's a servant is here to help someone, and I was always in the field, in the channel to be able to help someone. You know, today, that day. You know,
that's something we need. We need more.
Yeah, little was there on the bus, you know, 13, 14 years old, expecting to become a mom. I would talk to them and, you know, encourage them, you know. So, I mean, even the men, they could talk to me. They said I was the greatest listener. And that's what I was. That's what I was. I don't even mention, but this white gentleman got on my bus. And he asked me for $2. And I said, well, sir, if I give you my $2 and you go buy some wine, I'm going to put a prayer that Billy Graham can't even get off of you. And he said, oh, no, no, well, I want your money. I don't need your money. He said, I want something to eat. And I said, well, I'll be getting off in about 20 minutes. I can take you home and I can feed you. And, of course, I did that. But my husband looked at me like, this woman is always bringing folk and doing folk. But anyway, I fried some fish and some cornbread, made some slaw and fried some potatoes. And he said, and he ate. He said, oh, this is so good, so good. And he said, I said, we get ready to go to church. And he said, well, can I go? And I said, well, you've been drinking. And my husband said, well, let him go. So we got to church and the pastor said, here's Sister Joanne. She's begging in some more sheep. And he said, this woman here, she was driving the bus and I asked her for some money to get me something to eat, but she didn't do that. She took me to her house and cooked and fed me. And that's why I'm here tonight here in the church. So when we got ready to close out the service, he said, and this is a great lady. I thank God for her right now. And we got back to my home, he was trying to get a ticket to get to Virginia. So my husband and I walked right around the corner from the Greyhound station. We walked over to the Greyhound station, bought his ticket one way, told him to be blessed in his travel, and maybe we'll see him soon. Well, 5 years later, here come this guy. Nice starched white shirt, nice slacks, nice shoes. He gets on my bus at the corner of Glenwood Avenue and where Snoopy's hot dog is, Glenwood crossed over from Martin. Even when he gets on the bus and he says, good morning. I said, good morning. So he goes sit down. And about the third stop, he rang the bell. He says, I'm getting off here, miss. And he stands up and he says, y'all, let me tell you, this woman right here is the greatest woman I have ever known in my life. Let me tell you what. She cooked some fish. And when he said, cook some fish, he said some cornbread. I never had the cornbread. He said, but she cooked a good meal and took me to church. And I said, oh, I remember you 5 years. I remember you. You the one wanted some money to get something to drink. And he says, yeah, I knew that's what he wanted. Anyway, he says, you all love this woman. Christmas time is coming up. Make sure y'all bless her with gifts. Just flower her with your love. And I thought, man, I thought in many years I would never see this man. Anyway, he gives me a white envelope. And he said, this is just for you, just for you. I said, I appreciate it. I thought it was a card, you know. So when I got to Rex, I opened it up, and you wouldn't guess how much money was in that envelope. $500. And I thought, fixing you some fish and taking you to church for worth $500? But it wasn't that. I think he was just showing me how appreciative he was.
Yes.
For me to welcome him as I did, you know, a stranger. I mean, you just have to do it. When the Lord leads you to do it, you have to do it, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, the people, the South, it's known for its hospitality.
That's right. That's right.
We always feed people. There's a saying, and I learned this when I was growing up, about the South versus the North. And they would say, you could go to somebody's house in the South, they will offer you food, offer you something to drink.
Yes.
But if you go to somebody's house in the North, they will give you a drink, but they won't give you food.
Yes. So, that's what I heard too.
That is something I heard. I don't know how true that is. I know I live in New York, right? And I've been here close to 40 years. And, you know, I never thought about that. You know, I get food and drink, you know?
True. That's true.
But anyway, I do want to take it back to your early childhood and see what influences you had as a girl growing up into a woman, into, you know, this historic figure that you are now. So tell me a little bit about your childhood.
Well, I have been working there since I was 5 years old. Look how standing at the tobacco barn, handing tobacco to my mom. And back then, the owner of the tobacco property, he would pay me $5 a day, which I 5 years old, I couldn't count. I mean, I could count, but $5 to me was like a million, you know, and I'd give it to my mother. But as I got older, and by the way, my mother was one of the top loopers that in the country. She could loop 2 bars of tobacco a day, and I was one of the handers, and she had 3 other girls we hand tobacco to her. Let me tell you what, I picking up the corn and gathering the eggs from the chicken, and I always said I would never marry a farmer. No way. Because it's a lot of work, man. It's a lot of work. And all that tobacco, acres and acres of tobacco, and the cotton. I never did pick the cotton. But I grew up working in the tobacco. We sucker it when the time for the suckers to be pulled, we sucker it. Guns all, they back tobacco gum all over your hands, and then you hand it and you just roll up in your hand. We make gumballs and, oh, it was a nasty job. Nasty job. And I always said, well, I want a decent job where I can be clean, you know, could keep my clothes clean and neat. I said, this is not for me. When I get grown, I'm going to college, I'm going to get me a degree, and I am not going to work on no farm. So that's really what happened. But my driving experience came, and I think growing up on the farm will make you tough. It'll make you strong. It'll make you feel sort of dependent on yourself more. So you're driving the mule full of tobacco and driving the old farm trucks. And my brother had a tractor trailer. Howard, he's deceased now. He put me behind the wheel one day, and I just he said it looked like it came natural to me. I just drove it, you know, and my sister, she drove it. So we just picked up the habit of driving. And we both loved doing it. My sister, she drove tractor and trailer for a good while on her job. But the training, I think being on the farm and learning how to drive all this farm equipment did prep me. It gave me an advantage, I think, to operate the city bus because it was big, just like the tractor and trailer. And, you know, if you ask me, how can you drive that bus? I said, well, they don't make no special lanes. It fits in the lane, same lane you have a car. You just have to allow for your turning. You have to do adjustment as far as your turning. You know, you have to align your bus for a nice, smooth turn, you know. So I learned all that skills when I was young, driving the trucks. And, you know, you have to make a nice, smooth turn. And my upbringing on the farm, I really think that really coached me into getting into a bigger vehicle. To maneuver a bigger vehicle. And like I said, I didn't choose myself to do it. I was chosen to do it. I was like asked to do it. I was like forced to do it. You know, the guys on the job like John Giles and Cliff Brook, Walter Pettifor, Hat Jones, Lindbergh Chavis, these guys, Moses Stansel, oh man, they pushed me because Mr. Dean had me driving the bus every day, practicing every day. So the guy said, well, Jordan, you know you can drive. You go in there and you tell him, you need a paycheck. You're not coming out here to practice on this bus no more. Well, that afternoon when I got in from training on the bus with Mr. Dudley. Dudley was the head dispatcher there, so he took me and the other girl out driving training. So we got there that afternoon, and I said, well, maybe the guys are right. Maybe I do need to go in and speak to him and tell him I need a paycheck. I can't afford to come down here every day and practice on his bus and not make any money. So I was getting ready to go to his office, and he was stepping out of his office. He called me, and he says, Jeremy, I would like to speak to you in a second. I said, yes, sir. So I go in there. He said, could you be here in the morning at 4 o'clock? I said, yes, sir. I said, is there something special going on? He said, well, I'm going to hire you, and I want you to be here at 4 o'clock to start a run. I said, okay. I said, well, what about Kathy? Will she be coming also with me? He said, no, she won't be coming in. I said, well, okay, I certainly will be here. So when I left out of his office, I thought, did one of those guys go in Mr. Deaton's office and tell him, you know she can drive, give her the job? Did one of them say, mention something like that? Because when I got off, that's exactly what I was going to strut right in there and say, Mr. Deaton, you know, I've been practicing driving this bus for like almost 2 weeks. And is there any indication you're going to hire me? But, you know, he did. It was a surprise when I got off work. That's when he said, you want me back there that morning at 4 o'clock? Take a ride. I was ready. Bright and early.
Ready to go.
I was ready to go.
So this school, you had two weeks of class prior to you know, becoming full time. How did that work?
Well, the training of the veteran drivers trained me. You know, they will take you out on the route and you learn the left and right turns and you learn where the bus stops were at. And normally it was like maybe 2 months, but what I did, I got in my car. And I got the train. They call it the train back then, but it's the paperwork with your route and your times on it. But I got the trains, and I ran every route with my car, so I was able to finish up in less time than anyone. I did my training in right at 2 weeks and a half, when it's normally like a month or month and a half. You know, I was ready to do the job. So
did they have performance evaluations back then?
I had came by to speak with him and telling him how they were really pleased with the first woman to drive the city bus in Raleigh. Phone calls. He said that there was none negative. He said they were all positive. And he told me he was glad that he hired me because if he felt like if he had hired anyone else, it wouldn't have worked out as well. You know, he said the citizens of Raleigh really did love me, and he was glad that he chose me out of all the applicants. He was glad because he said he thought it wouldn't turn out as well. So I got a lot of awards for, I was the first female driver of the quarter. I had driven over 1,000,000 miles.
That's what I wanted to talk about, Joanne. I want to talk about all these awards that you got.
The National Safety Council rated our driving, and they gave me a medal for driving over 1,000,000 miles. And every quarter, I received a pin to go with my uniform. There was one driver, Otis Poole. He was there way before me. He had about 40 pins on his necktie. I mean, they were just lined up.
Do these pins represent again? I know you may have said
it. Well, it's your safe driving, skills. They represent your safe driving skills. No accidents, no incidents, you know.
So, you run over anybody or anything like that?
That's right. Can't run anybody. That'll knock off the safety award right there. So, okay. You had to be careful. You had to be safe. You had to always think safety at all times. Mayor McFarland was the mayor at the time when I started driving. So she gave me a big plaque, and they planted a tree in my name. The mayor in the town where I was living in Garner, he said he couldn't let Raleigh outdo him. I was a citizen there for 30-some years. So he came to my retirement. He gave me a plaque.
You had a tree planted too, right?
Yeah, I had a tree. It's planted in Worthdale. Yes.
What kind of tree was it? Pine or oak or what?
You know, Roy, I haven't even visited the site.
You haven't gone and see your tree?
I haven't gone to see my tree. I'm sure the birds are enjoying it. But I didn't get the map to show me exactly where it's planted at. And my sister was mentioning it earlier. She said, we all need to go to that tree and take a family portrait by that tree. I said, yeah, we should. So as soon as the weather warms up, that's what we plan on doing. Yeah, we plan on doing that.
Right. You got to send us a picture of that tree.
I certainly will.
Wait, what year did they plant this tree?
2012.
And you have not seen this tree once?
I haven't seen it. Need you busy, you know? Because now, I drive for North Carolina State University, the Wolfman does.
Uh-huh.
I also do the safety announcements. What else do I do? Go in service to pick up students. So I've had a busy life. I mean, my plate is just full, you know.
If you have grandkids, that would be something that's interesting to let them see.
All right. There's nothing like the grandkids seeing, you know, how their mother worked so hard. What you achieved, and, you know, I always say this to my kids, is that, you know, you have to make a difference. And you made a difference. And that's the key.
Not so much
being famous than making a difference in your life.
Yeah, that's right? Kind of when you think of the comment when they say, if a tree falls in the forest and no one sees it, did it still fall? Right? You have a lot of people that have made valuable contributions to society that, you know, a lot of people know about it and maybe only a few people know about it, but it still doesn't make one contribution greater than the other based off of how far that reach has gone.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. Because you kind of started the domino effect, you know. Luckily enough, your boss hired the right person, you know, because a lot of times when people are trying something new, you know, they kind of have to kind of go through it. You know, you select someone, she doesn't work out. She realizes this isn't her thing. She maybe she's not able to kind of withstand some of the challenges. And then, you know, maybe fourth and a half person, they get the right person, but they struck gold with you the first time. So that made their job easier as well.
Yeah. I worked 2 years by myself as the only female. Then a girlfriend was hired. She worked three months. She said, Joanne, I can't take it. I don't know how you do it, but I can't do this anymore. So she quit. And then might have been 6 months after she quit, he hired another girl. And she says, Joanne, I can't take it. I can't do it. I don't know how you do it. And she quit. So here I am still by myself. Nobody's talked to some female companionship on the job. And he finally hired another girl, Lucille. So me and her got along real well. We could talk, you know, meet each other every morning. And, we could conversate because we were on the same level, you know. We could talk to girl talk, you know. Lucy worked there about 10 years. Yeah, I think women are very dependable when it comes to working for transit.
So, Now I was going to ask you, I think that's a segue, or you jumped a little bit. You were thinking what I was thinking, basically. I was going to ask you, what are the opportunities for women out there, you know, in transit now, in transportation?
Oh, the opportunity is great. The men seem like they respect you more than when I was hired. The men respect you more, and they're more helpful now. You know, they know your bus sometimes, they'll start it for you. They're really more helpful now than they were back when I started in 1977. I mean, they seem like they appreciate the women more in the transit field than when I was hired. I mean, I had some drivers that really encouraged me, but then there were some that didn't like the idea of me coming into the workforce. We got to change our language. We got to button up our jacket and zip up our pants. And I told myself, you should be doing that anyway. You know, you should be respecting one another anyway. You shouldn't just come on the job with your shirt tail hanging all out, your shoes untied. You should be ready to go to work professionally, go to work. So, but it has really changed today. The men accept the women more, and they're more respectful to them. You know, that's the big change. It's a big change.
Okay. Now you retired from the you're driving for the Wolf Line now.
Yeah.
From your first position or your first career, for 35 years you were there.
I retired August the 30th, my birthday, August the 30th, 2012. Wow. I did some traveling out for that a year, and then I got back. I got bored, and I thought, well, God, I've been working all my life. What am I going to do with my life? And one of the Wolf Line drivers that I was his supervisor at Catbus, he said, "Well, you know, they always hiring people to drive the Wolf Line." So I went down and put my application in, and the manager, she said, "Oh, we saw you on TV, and anybody worth a job 35 years, that's stability. We need you." And, you know, so I took the drum test and started to work that same day.
So cool. And then after 35 years, you could have retired, but you did. You're not retired. What are you
I'm not retired.
Now?
I've been with Wolf Line, not going to say University of Wolf Line now. It'll be 9 years in June. 9 years.
Wow.
So 9 years plus 35, that's about 44 years of transportation that I know that long period of time. So I know some transportation.
She said I could write a book on transportation.
Oh, I think she's going
to
do it.
I'm starting a book soon. According to Ms. Bridget Stokes, I've been starting a book. She has been pressuring me. She said, Joanne, you got so much to tell.
Yeah.
You should put it in a book. And you know what the stories I've told y'all about people helping me? I'm putting all that stuff in a book. I mean, I know I have at least 500 some pages. Because everybody in Raleigh knows me. They knew me and they knows me. So I wouldn't have a problem, I don't think, selling the book. I mean, that's so many of them. Joy, you got to run for, office like the mayor or the governor. I said, oh, no. I'm not that kind of person. I just stick to
make
driving.
A difference where you feel it's more
yes.
Productive. Right.
I said, no, thank you. I'll stick to driving. And they say, well, I tell you, you were one of the best. They'll never have another Joanne driving a bus. I said, well, yeah. The motor was thrown away when I was created. Yep.
Well, when I saw you up there dancing with the Temptations, what, a few nights ago, last week,
for
one of our family's birthday, you were doing it.
Yep, 73. Wow. I don't take any medicines. I walk 4 miles a day, not counting steps when I park my bus and walk. I end up averaging 5 miles a day anyway. But, yeah, my doctor said I'm healthy as a horse, and I thank God for that. And I plan on continuing to be healthy, you know. I mean, I eat what I want to eat. I do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I just, yes.
Moderation.
Yes, I love life. I love God first, and I love people, and I love family. And I'm just a people person. I just always have been. My mother told me, listen, my mother told me when I was 12 years old, she says, Joanne, whenever you meet someone, you will leave a lasting impression. It's either something that I say or make them laugh or something serious. She said, they will remember you. And sure enough, I could be out shopping or where, bump into somebody, and they said, seem like I know you. I said, well, where do you think you might know me from? I can't figure it out. It's somewhere I've seen you. I said, well, I drove to see the bus in Raleigh for you. That's where I saw you at. You were the best driver, you know. And that makes me feel so good. Yeah, yeah.
That's your legacy. You left a legacy of driving.
Yeah, right? that's
part of your legacy.
That lasting impression. First impression.
I mean, I think the people around you that had to interact with you, they're the lucky ones. You know, you're just an awesome person, Joanne.
Yeah, they always say that. You know, they try to draw from my strength because I'm always positive. I never try to be down. And if I were down, I wouldn't show up. You wouldn't know it. I change my attitude. I leave the problems back at home, and it's a day's work for me, and I'm
no time for that.
I think we're similar in that sense.
That's right.
I mean, any negative situation, I could always look at a positive. Somewhere there's a positive in there somewhere.
That's right. That's right. No matter what goes, you can turn it into a positive situation. It's up to you. It's up to the person, you know. Somebody sits on your bus and you say good morning, they don't speak back. And I always say, well, they had the earplugs in the ear. They didn't hear me. And someone says, they heard you. They just ignorant. They just don't care. Well, didn't bother me. I done what I was supposed to do. If I stood before God, he would say, well done, daughter. You spoke to everybody that entered into your bus. Now, the ones that didn't speak that, they're the ones I want to talk to.
But that at the same time, you never know what someone's going through. Sometimes someone can be getting on the bus and they're so caught up in whatever they're going through that they may not have heard you or may not have had the consonance to respond.
And don't forget your personal items. Everybody, thank you. We appreciate that. We like the way you did that. Thank you so much. Some of the ones that had the earplugs in the ear, they didn't respond. Then they say, thank you so much. Thank you. You have a great day, too. And, you know, so I think most time they do hear you, but you do have people that's tuned out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just them, you know. That's just them. And everybody's different, you know.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, we're all God's children, but everybody's different.
It wouldn't be any fun if everybody was the same, right?
That's the truth. That's what makes it different, yeah. You're right.
There you go. It takes all kinds to make a world. Absolutely. So, Joanne, as we inch towards the end of our interview with you, is there anything that you would like to share? You shared a lot already, you know, in the show right now. Is there anything else you would like to share with our audience? We got a global audience. You know, it could be somebody in Vietnam listening.
Oh, wow. My last statement I would like to share would be, if the Lord were to see fit to call me home, you don't have to mention that I was the first female operator to drive the city bus in Raleigh, chosen out of 110 female. You don't have to say that. Just tell the world, Joanne tried to treat everybody right, and Joanne tried to love everybody. That's good enough for me.
Amen. Amen.
Amen. Yes. I end that. Amen.
That's right. Important.
That's important.
All right. But I want to thank everybody for.
You have graced us.
I mean, we're honored to have you. And hey, when you start writing that book, are you getting to come back and give us an update on how that's coming along? There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds good, Joanne. Yeah. Miss Sida White, North Carolina's one and only first female. Bus driver, black or white, Chinese or Japanese, doesn't matter. She's the first female bus driver in North Carolina. Public bus driver. So that's awesome. All right. So with that said, everybody, thank you for joining the Walt Weekly. And tune in to our next show. We got some big shows coming up. We have Walter Latham Jr., who's the CEO of Latham Entertainment and the creator of the original Kings of Comedy. And I'm talking about Bernie Mac, and I'm talking about Steve Harvey, I'm talking about Cedric. Yeah, that Walter Latham, he created the Kings of Comedy. So he'll be in our show next month. Stay tuned. We got some big shows coming up, people. So with that said, I'd like to thank y'all, and I'll see you next time. Bye.